6:12 on a Tony Conley Morning Show, 1320 WILS, 1320WILS.com, 48 degrees, pretty good looking Friday morning TGIF to you. Let's head out to the McLaren Health Plan phone line at 393-3700 and talk with Michael Lefebvre, who is the director of the Maury Fiscal Policy Initiative for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Michael, how are you?
Outstanding, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing very well. In his new book, economist Todd Buchholz is quoted a bank robber, Willie Sutton, to explain why so many businesses lobby government for special favors, including tariff subsidies and monopoly privileges. And I quote, "That's where the money is," Sutton once said when asked why he robbed banks. What made you dive into this?
I've had a long-term interest in the subject of what's called public choice economics, how we make public choices, and how there are extraordinary parallels between private life, those of us who try to maximize our self-interest through private endeavors, and public life, those who end up maximizing their self-interest through trying to become an insider in government, whether it's as a politician or going to politicians and seeking favors, either protective or direct subsidies in the hope of maximizing your self-interest. And that is not only done by individuals, but by businesses and large corporations as well. I think one of the reasons that the Occupy Wall Street movement got so much attention is that people were upset by the fact that banks and other institutions had it pretty easy, not only in terms of protective regulations from competition, but from direct subsidies to their businesses, something that many people thought was just unfair. This goes on across the world in democratic societies and in state capitals across the United States. I've been writing a lot on the Michigan Liquor Control Code because it is a collection of protective favors and mandates actually written into the law that seem to drive business toward a lucky few businesses known as the Michigan Beer and Wine Wholesalers. And most recently, I have been looking at or trying to measure the degree to which these lucky 60 to 75 wholesaling families generate profits thanks to favors written into the code by Lansing politicians.
Who's getting these favors? What are they? And why did they get them?
Well, in this particular instance, the wholesalers are benefiting from the favors. The state of Michigan has written into its code since as early as the 1970s a number of favors, the most offensive to me being the exclusive sales territories mandate. The state actually mandates that suppliers of beer and wine grant exclusive sales territories to wholesaling families in Michigan. So let's say that I'm an wholesaler in Bay County or Saginaw County, and I have I'm Budweiser and I want a distributor. I have to actually grant a wholesaler a particular region that he alone can sell my product. That allows the wholesalers to goose up the price that they charge to Joe Sixpack when he goes to buy his six-pack of beer. And that can amount to quite a bit, though it's difficult to tease out exactly how much. I've seen studies back in the early 90s that said that between 1 penny and 17 cents per six-pack of beer just gets skimmed right off the top thanks to these exclusive territories and ends up in the profits of wholesalers, profits that they might not otherwise be able to make if they were not granted an exclusive sales territory, a monopoly status by their particular state. On a grander scale, though, I mentioned an example with Northwest Airlines. The former Northwest Airlines, now Delta, actually got busted in the early 2000s trucking in beer from Minnesota to use at their Detroit Metro Airport, for outbound flights. And they said that they were saving $3 million a year by going around the beer wholesaler in that territory. And that's just for part of their business through Metro Airport. So that gives you an idea of the scale of the money that's available to these beer and wine wholesalers just from one mandate in state law.
Why is this done?
Because people lobby for these protective favors. And you hate to say that these politicians recognize that there might be a quid pro quo involved, but there doesn't seem, in my view, in all the scholarly research I've done, looking at other university professors' investigations into this, to be a legitimate economic reason. Study after study seems to show that this just hurts consumers to the benefit of wholesalers. It's actually what I call the transfer of wealth from, or an invisible tax from wholesalers, or from consumers to wholesalers. This invisible tax doesn't go to build roads, constructed by the state or anything. It's just an ability to increase the profits of a lucky few families.
Oh, it doesn't make any sense. Why are we allowing this to happen? Politically, I guess I could see the gain, but I'm surprised more people don't say something.
Well, fortunately, they have an opportunity now because there's going to be a debate on the liquor control code in Michigan. Governor Snyder is going to announce as early as next week, I think, the changes he wants to see be made to the liquor control code and related rules. Whether or not this includes removing the exclusive sales territory mandate, I do not know. I don't think it will because, well, it's an election year, and I don't think that many controversial major changes are going to take place before November. And this is, by the way, only one mandate in state law. The state also, for instance, has a rule called post and hold, which forces wholesalers to make their price changes in their products public by filing them in Lansing. So those price changes are available to other wholesalers in neighboring exclusive territories, and so it amounts to effectively legal price collusion. If I know what my price change is going to be, but if I know what my competitor's price change is going to be, I can match them. Worse, the state doesn't permit the price change to happen again automatically. So if I'm a beer wholesaler and I change the price of a product, I have to hold that price in place for a length of time. I think it's 180 days before I can change it again. And that suffocates competition, even among wholesalers who are just neighbors with each other, who still have exclusive territories but are otherwise competing with a neighboring wholesaler. And the list goes on.
Mike, you also write about the state law that also benefits beer and wine wholesalers by imposing population-based quotas.
Yes. People may not realize this, but if you want to, say, sell liquor from a liquor store, a carry-out packaged liquor store, you need a license. And the state restricts the number of licenses there are for this particular business to 1 per 3,000 of population. There is no such mandate for beer and wine retailers. So the system works to limit the opportunities you have to purchase liquor, but it's unlimited in the number of retailers that can be held for beer and wine. And so this has an effect of, you know, what economists call a substitution effect. Because there's a relatively more expensive option for liquor because it's harder to find, you end up consuming or substituting away from liquor into beer and wine, which benefits the beer and wine wholesalers. There's also a half-mile rule. A liquor store, with some exceptions, can't be located within a half-mile of another liquor store, which, you know, again, limits the ability of people to acquire the liquor they want and might lead to them substituting into beer and more beer and wine. And, again, these are not the only areas in the alcohol control code that benefit the beer and wine wholesalers.
And even though they benefit the beer and wine wholesalers, it seems like it doesn't benefit the state of Michigan.
You know, that's a great point. The state acts as wholesaler for liquor, and so it can goose up the cost of the liquor just as a wholesaler, just by applying a markup. However, the beer and wine wholesalers, you know, the beer and wine wholesaling takes place privately, and money that might end up in the coffers of Michigan just end up in the coffers of the beer and wine wholesalers due to these particular favors. Imagine if we tore down the three-tier system and people were allowed to purchase their alcohol without having the alcohol pass through a wholesaler, say going directly to Costco, who would get it right from the supplier. That would drive down the price of beer. The state could offset the decline in the price of beer with a small tax, and revenues would flow to the Treasury that could be used for other things such as roads or staving off another tax hike. I think the state could benefit a great deal if it removed prohibitions on greater competition for alcohol in the state. Now, I'm not advocating a tax increase necessarily. I don't think one is necessary. But I think the people of Michigan would be much better off removing these restrictions on free competition in the alcohol trade and then perhaps offsetting the benefits of a price decline with a small tax increase. I think there would really be a net increase or a net improvement in our well-being.
And, Michael, we're talking about a lot of product when we talk about beer, wine, and alcohol consumed by a lot of people.
That's exactly correct.
So that means a lot of money.
Yeah, and you know, a small decrease in the price saves consumers millions statewide. And whether or not the state would want to take up a portion of that with a new tax would be their business. It's a legitimate policy discussion. I don't think a tax increase anywhere is necessary, but I think that there could be a win-win situation if we were to tear down the three-tier system and make the state more competitive in alcohol and then offset the price of that alcohol with a tax increase. It would just the losers in this would be the wholesalers, of course, and they will pitch a fit and lobby hard to keep things the way they are.
Well, you've been talking with Michael Lefebvre, who is with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. It just occurs to me, if you look at the history of Rick Snyder, the bean counter, and I say that with all due respect, you would think that we may see some changes coming here.
Well, we have. He said he's a numbers man, and we have provided two empirical analyses prior to my publication yesterday on how Michigan's liquor control code affects the price of hard liquor and beer. And I hope to do the same with wine, should the data be made available to me.
All right. And maybe you'll be able to have a glass of wine while you write that piece.
Already have, honey.
All right, Michael. Thanks so much. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you. You do the same.
6:23 on a Tony Conley Morning Show on 1320 WILS.